Jensen Watt, News Radio 1180 WHAM, proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 18th of May, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, Pavlov's dogs are alive and well. As you can tell, Dave Enright is not with us. He is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest on his motorcycle, shooting and a-riding and a-whooping and a-hollering. And Steve apparently can't say his name until Dave said his first.
Well, because I know I have two or three more seconds.
Yeah. Even though you see there's no chair here, there's no one sitting in the chair, and you yourself remarked that he would not be here today.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. As long as I understand
that's
it all.
Okay. It'll get fixed in post-production.
Yeah. That was the big thing. For those of you who missed it, you missed one heck of a presentation on Wednesday night. The great and magnificent Chris Reich actually... was the guest speaker at the Apple Cider meeting on Wednesday, in which he showed us all the stuff he actually does to get the Soundbites podcast ready for production.
It's way more than I ever did.
Way more than any of us ever did. And really, I came away with two things from that. One is, first, I realized that the reason it sounds so professional is that a professional is doing it. And two, you do way too much. Way too much. Holy mother of pearl.
As I said several times Wednesday night, it's a labor of love.
It has to be, because we're not paying you for that. I'm telling you right now. That's just unbelievable.
But as I said before, you let me come here and play radio. So
that's
what the heck?
That's exactly right. So why not? He was phenomenal. If you missed it, too bad for you.
Well, eventually it'll be up as a sound file on the cider board right. As soon as Chris can get it finished.
As soon as I get it through post.
Here's our first story. This is a great, this is one of the stories you think, what? A Missouri woman was indicted Thursday for her alleged role in perpetrating a hoax on the online social network MySpace against a 13-year-old neighbor who committed suicide. Megan Meyer, 13, hanged herself in her bedroom after being targeted in a MySpace hoax. Lori Drew of suburban St. Louis allegedly helped create a MySpace account in the name of someone who didn't exist to convince Megan Meyer that she was chatting with a 16-year-old boy named Josh Evans. Lori Drew, was charged with conspiracy and fraudulently gaining access to someone else's computer. Megan hanged herself at home in October 2006, allegedly after receiving a dozen or more cruel messages, including one stating the world would be better off without her. Salvador Hernandez, assistant agent in charge of the Los Angeles FBI office, called the case heartrending. The internet is a world unto itself. People must know how far they can go before they must stop. They exploited a young girl's weaknesses, Hernandez said. Whether the defendant could have foreseen the result, she is responsible for her actions. Drew was charged with one count of conspiracy and three counts of accessing protected computers without authorization to get information used to inflict emotional distress on the girl. Drew has denied creating the account or sending messages to Megan. Missouri state lawmakers voted and gave final approval Friday to a bill which will deal with cyber harassment. The bill is expected to cover several aspects of the new wave of technology, identifying as illegal the harassment from computers, text messages, and many other electronic devices besides the well-known written and telephone communications. Republican Governor Matt Blunt, who will soon sign the final version of the bill, issued a statement saying that the social networking sites and technology have provided criminals with a whole new set of weapons against their victims, and the new protections and penalties are highly needed in order to ensure a safer environment for everyone. Under the current state laws, the maximum possible penalty that Lori Drew can receive is 20 years in prison. And if she is, in fact, guilty of it, I hope they give her every freaking second. That's just one of those things
this is like that cheerleader thing a few years ago where the mother of one cheerleader, you know, kills the other cheerleader, rival of her daughter.
Yeah, but here's an adult woman, and she's ragging on some 13-year-old kid to the point where the kid commits suicide. What? How disturbed and deranged is this woman?
Yeah, I haven't read whether she had a kid or you know, if there's any interaction between her kid and the victim.
Well, there doesn't seem to have been any.
Yeah,
I understood that she had a daughter and wanted to know if the one who hanged herself was saying bad things about this woman's daughter. That was my understanding of what I.
Oh, see, I didn't, all the stories I read didn't give any private details at all. So that's possible.
Still, that's inexcusable.
Yeah, she went just a tiny, tiny bit over the line, I think.
It's just too disturbing.
Yeah, that's just one of those things. And you know, I'm a believer that I think we have enough laws. I think it's time, you know, we have enough laws. But in this case, if what they've done, there's, again, not a lot of detail there. If what they've done is extend the current laws against that stuff, you know, writing, harassment type things or sending mail and just simply extended that explicitly into the electronic realm. I have no real problem with that. It should be all of those things should be extended into the electronic realm to begin with. But I don't see any need to go about writing a whole bunch of new laws. I mean, I guess legally, if it doesn't say electronic, then you can't prosecute them under electronic. So yeah, extend the law to say that, but don't add a whole bunch of new laws because there's no difference between the real world and the electronic world in terms of how you should behave and how you should be punished.
There's a harassment is harassment regardless of the tool used.
Exactly. There's a lot of the same issues going on in cyber stalking cases where you know the victim and the suspect may be in two completely different states. So whose jurisdiction is it? And there've been a lot of cases where someone ends up driving across so the FBI should be involved driving across state lines and abducting the person that they've been harassing.
Yeah, that would be interstate commerce. So
yeah.
A federal offense.
Right, actually, would be the Mann Act. Well,
most of the stories I've read about that, the victim tries to call their local police, and there's nothing we can do. It's always that catch-22. There's nothing we can do until they break the law.
Right.
So you have to wait till you get murdered, then you can have them arrested.
Right. All right. On that chipper note, we'll go to the phones. Our first caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Morning, guys. I turned on my computer this morning, and my AVG antivirus, the spyware and antivirus.
I did it spyway. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they're outdated.
Yes, if you're running version 7 of AVG, you must update to the version 8. They're going to stop releasing the definition files for version 7.
I am on 8.
Well, then all you need to do is update.
I did.
And there's still?
Still nothing.
Okay, then you're...
What's the exact error message you're getting?
Databases outdated on both of the anti-spyware and antivirus when you look at the overview.
And yet when you updated them, there was nothing new?
Nothing. Not a thing.
Is your connection to the internet intact?
Yeah, I'm on the internet. No problem.
How's the date and time on your computer?
It's 11:14. What time is it?
Yeah, that's
close
enough.
Okay.
But it's got the right day and year?
Are you using the update feature inside of AVG, or are you manually downloading the updates?
I'm clicked on updating right now, and I'm mainly doing it right now.
But yeah.
I also have it set up to where it does it every couple hours.
Mm-hmm. You may want to try going to Grisoff's website and manually downloading the updates, free.grisoff.com. They have a big button that says download updates.
Oh.
Or you may need to uninstall and reinstall.
Ultimately,
uninstall, download a new one, and reinstall.
I've done that. I've uninstalled and reinstalled it the last couple days.
Alternately, are you sure that message is coming from AVG and not from Windows Defender?
Well, it's on the AVG when I click on the antivirus, so I'm assuming it's AVG.
All right, all right. Yeah, that's your bet. Well, if download the updates manually, that would work, should work. It may well be that they're a little slow getting the latest updates out. I clearly have not been on this morning because I've been prepping for the show and stuff. But it's very possible that that's where the problem is.
I'll go to the site.
They have a fact. Database outdated, but no updates available. So the database outdated message comes when your database is more than 1 week old. So they figure if it's more than a week old, it's out of date. If it's more than an hour old, it's almost out of date sometimes. Yeah. Most correctly caused by incorrect date and time or time zone settings. Check your time zone also. So yeah, your time was right. Make sure that the day and date are correct also.
And also the time zone you're in.
Yeah.
It's Eastern time.
Okay. All right. Then it is very possible that what the story is there hasn't been an update in a week.
Oh, okay.
You know, and essentially what's happening is AVG assumes, the software assumes there will be an update at least once a week.
Okay, I'll just wait for them then.
Right, and if there is no update, it says, oh my golly, I've had no update in a whole week. But if there's no update, there's no update.
Okay. One other quick question.
Sure.
Service Pack 3, is it okay to download now?
There is an issue if you're still using Internet Explorer 6 that Service Pack 3 will give you 7 whether you want it or not. And there's a big complex workaround to get 6 back.
So you think just holding off or?
No, that will probably be the problem forever.
Right. That will always be a problem. The way around that, as near as I can tell, is you install 7 first.
All right.
Then you install Service Pack 3, which will now not update 7 because you've already got it. Then you could, if you wanted to, uninstall 7 and go back to 6.
Can you Internet Explorer 6 still be on the computer? Can you have 6 and 7 on at the same time?
No, you cannot. But that's why you upgrade to 7 first. Because if you upgrade to 7 through the Service Pack 3, you cannot uninstall it. You're stuck with 7 forever. Of course, you shouldn't be using Internet Explorer anyway. You should be using Firefox.
I do.
So it doesn't matter what happens with Internet Explorer.
But some sites, you have, Firefox won't work. So
yeah, there are some sites you must use IE.
Right.
And IE7 security is a lot better than IE6. The problem is a lot of the third-party plugins don't work, and some third-party programs don't work. What was it? Dave's QuickBooks.
Right.
QuickBooks, they may hopefully fixed it by now. QuickBooks will not work if you have IE7 installed. So
okay.
There are other issues besides just the browser you're using.
All right.
And according to AVG, the latest antivirus update was May 17th. So are you getting the message from antivirus or anti-spyware?
Both.
So that sounds like there's something wrong in his installation because there are updates less than a week old.
Well, I've had this for quite a while. I installed AVG over AVG the last couple of days, and it was okay. Yeah, when I turned it on this morning.
Yeah. I would uninstall it and reinstall it. Make sure you get the free version. They're kind of hiding it now. You have to work harder to get the free version.
Well, I paid for the 8.0.
Oh, well, then just download another version.
Ah. I'm looking at the free version. Let me see if the pay version. The pay version should have the same updates as the free version, though.
You would think it would be even more.
Yeah, the free version would be a little farther behind, yeah. But yeah, uninstall and reinstall sometimes works better than installing over top of.
Right. Sometimes things get confused.
I'm going to do that right now.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have found over time that that's a bigger problem than we used to think. You know, this whole uninstalling, reinstalling, over-installing, under-installing. Installation is a problem when it comes to a version that's already on your machine. Oddly, you would think these people would understand their products, but sometimes they leave a piece on that's older than the one they really need. That comes back to the problem of DLL.
Yeah, the whole shared library. Some other program is using this old version, so we can't remove it.
Right. DLLs are dynamic link libraries. Basically, they're pieces and parts of Windows that everybody gets to share. The problem is if you need a newer version and you want to wipe out the old version and put the new version on, well, Windows has some very, very, very few good controls. But one of the ones they do have is that you can't uninstall a program, a DLL, if a program needs it. So consequently, you often find yourself either with multiple versions of the same DLL, which is problematic at best.
Yeah, you get that message. Another program might be using this. Do you want to uninstall it? You shouldn't.
Well,
I don't know if another program is using it.
Right, might be. Right,
yeah.
Right. So it becomes a problem, and you end up with a lot of DLLs that are out of date and out of sorts, and something's using one and something's using another, and if they're not named sufficiently differently, there's a confusion and a problem, and eventually you end up with just sludge all over your hard drive. That's one of the problems I don't see in either Linux or the Mac.
That's right.
The way that they do things in terms of, even when they do use shared libraries, it seems they do a much better job of maintaining versions to do things. I know on both Windows and Linux, it's, you know, I used to make jokes about the 4.7.3 point J point left elbow point four. And so they keep track much better of what version belongs to what. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case.
Frank Sinatra, patron saint of Italians everywhere. I can't believe I'm interrupting him. I apologize to all my relatives, every single one of them. I apologize. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are doing it. Oh, I was too bad. There we are. All right. Microsoft on Friday confirmed that it had yanked part of a backup feature from a major upgrade to its Windows Home Server software scheduled for release later this year. PowerPack 1 beta users claimed service-wide backup has been ditched because of a difficult-to-solve set of bugs. If you are using the Windows Home Server, and many are, you were probably looking forward to the ability to back up your machine to the server. PowerPack 1 will not provide a tool to back up your backup database. So you can back up your data. You just can't back up the backup database. So, you know, that means you can't restore if the machine goes down. Okay.
You back up your own data, but not the application program.
Or the backup database that tells you what you backed up and where and when.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. It said that Microsoft said they would ship the major upgrade in the first half of 2008. Among the features it touted then was what it called Windows Home Server Data Backup. Hey, here, this will sound familiar to you Mac people. While adding a hard drive to Windows Home Server, your user is now presented with an option to use the hard drive for backing up the home server. Once this option is selected, the home server will appear in the Computers and Backup tab, where a user can decide what information they want to store in this hard drive. You can also back up and restore the entire home computer backup database. Microsoft Manager denied claims that all of the backup features scheduled for PowerPack 1 had been stripped. However, later the same day, the senior product manager for Windows Home Server confirmed that server-wide backup had been pulled, while the shared folder backup remained. PowerPack 1 will provide a new feature, server backup and restore, meaning customers will be able to offload and protect their pictures, music, documents, etc., that they have in the server shared folders. And listen carefully to this next, the server backup functionality won't include the PC backup database, but backing up shared folders is the important scenario. Now, here is the sentence you should listen to very carefully. We discovered that it was best to only allow users to back up their shared folders.
Which, if you're going to back up everything, that's the important thing. But it'd be nice to back up the whole thing, too.
Well, I'm sure they ran into, oh, my golly, we're going to let them back up applications? That would be some violation somewhere of something, wouldn't it?
A EULA, perhaps?
No, yeah. I'm guessing they can't figure out how to back up the registry.
I think you're probably exactly right.
Oh, well, you can back it up, but you can't restore it.
You're right.
Wasn't that the old joke with Microsoft Backup for forever? Microsoft Backup worked really great. Microsoft Restore didn't.
Yeah, that wasn't a joke.
That was the
truth.
That
was simply true. Oh. You could back up everything, and it looked like the backup was lovely.
Which it did. The backup was fine.
Yeah, when you tried to restore it, it just never worked right. Not ever.
You guys make me so happy I gave up on Microsoft products.
Yeah. I use a product called rSync. I am a believer that I don't have to back up the operating system. Of course, I'm using Linux, so all of the 18, 20,000 programs are just available for download. It's not a big deal for me.
It's backed up worldwide for you.
Exactly. But I do back up my documents folder using a product called rSync, which connects to a remote system. I have two separate ones out on the internet because I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy. And it will take only the newest stuff.
Right.
And in fact, it takes piece. It's magic. I don't know how it works. If I have a document and I change a couple of words in the middle, it only backs up those couple of words.
No kidding.
And it does it right. So instead of like a 40K document going out, you know, 1K goes. So the bandwidth after your first backup is ludicrously small.
Yeah, that's one of the issues I've run into with Time Machine, which is Apple's backup built into the current OS X Leopard. By default, it backs up everything. So there's that question, you want a fast backup or a fast restore?
Right.
If you back up everything on your computer, you get a fast restore. If you just back up your documents, well, then you got to load your OS, you got to load the updates, you got to load the apps, you got to load the updates. Then you can load your documents back on. So that's a longer restore. So Time Machine backs up everything, including system files. And even if you've only made a couple of changes to your files, there may be a few thousand system files that changed, and it right. still takes a while to run. So there's a new program out called Time Machine Editor. By default, the Apple Time Machine backs up every hour, which is kind of nice. You don't do too much work in an hour, and you'll only lose an hour's worth of work. But it's annoying sometimes when that backup pops up every hour. So Time Machine Editor lets you change the duration or interval between backups for people that only need to back up once a day.
Well, I'm one of those people who believes if my machine died, I probably don't want to now restore an unstable machine. Because it died for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it wasn't a hardware reason.
Right. So you can take your backup drive to another machine and you're back up almost instantly.
You're back up almost instantly. Right. If you back up everything, including the system files, what you're restoring is probably unstable. That's why it crashed to begin with.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to be in that situation twice. I really just need my documents. If my system crashes and it's not a hardware issue, I do want to reinstall everything and just get my documents back.
But as a practical matter, have you seen that happen in Linux?
No, never. But I don't believe in practical when it comes to backup. I believe in overkill. I believe in massive overkill when it comes to backup.
Okay.
That's how I do things. All right, our next caller is Nick in Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Nick. What's your question?
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
I have a three-year-old HP printer hooked up to my desktop that has XP Home. I also have a laptop that has Vista Home Basic hooked up to a Linksys router, and everything is working perfectly fine. Now, I've been wanting to print wireless from my laptop, which is in one room, to my printer that's in another room, and to set that up, I went to my desktop and into control panels and instructing it to share the printer. Then I went to my laptop in control panels and chose add a network printer, and all went very well. I printed and received a test sheet, although it took a little while. So my issue is this. When I go to print something wireless from my laptop, I have to wait at least 2-3 minutes for like my prompt screens to come up. And then when they finally do, I have to wait another few minutes before the actual printing starts. So I'm waiting 5 to 6 minutes. Now, printing direct from my desktop only takes seconds.
Right.
Why is this taking so
long? Have you tried connecting the printer directly to the laptop and see what happens?
That I haven't done yet.
Yeah, it may not be a network issue. It may be a printer driver issue.
Right. The problem is, well, it may be, but it also, are your documents just plain text, or is there a lot of graphics?
No. Some are very, very basic and short. Very short.
Here's interesting. I had exactly the same problem, and I don't know why it went away. I hate to say that, but I don't. What happened was, I thought, well, you know, this is for my wife's machine. She's wireless because she's on another floor. And I assumed that it was mainly because she was printing large graphic files.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make some sense.
Right.
Because the connection may be fast, but it's not that fast. And you're going to take the time to spool the data on your machine,
mm-hmm.
then transmit it to the server in my case, spool it on the server, and then print it.
Mm-hmm.
So I expected it to take a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, is this before printing starts or before the window comes up on your screen asking if you want to print?
Before the window. First of all, I'll go and I want something printed, and I'll print. I'll go to my file, and then I'll hit print. And I've got to wait at least 2 to 3 minutes before the next screen comes on. For example, your properties.
Right.
Yeah, how many pages, how many copies. So that's even before it looks at the network.
Right, exactly. And now the actual printing itself is not an issue. The speed there is not an issue. It's just all these waiting for these screens.
I'm wondering if it's a file permission issue. The Vista machine doesn't have permission to see the XP machine.
The Vista machine is the one the computer's connected to.
No, the other way around.
No, the laptop.
The laptop's on Vista.
Correct.
And the print server's on XP.
Correct.
A lot of times we've seen that be a firewall issue.
Where
you can't print at all would be a firewall issue.
Yeah.
But delayed printing.
It sounds to me like you're right. It's a permissions issue. And there's a lot of handshaking going on between the old machine and the new machine
to
make sure you're allowed to print.
Correct.
If you take the printer and say anybody can print, see if that helps.
Now, where would I have to go to
on the machine that the computer's the desktop. And open up the printer and right click on it and select sharing.
Correct. Okay.
And make sure that everybody has rights to that printer.
That might be under a security or advanced or other button.
Right. It's either under sharing or security, either one.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're just tabs on the same window.
Mm-hmm. If this were a permissions issue, he would never see a printout at all.
Well, not necessarily, because it may just be a handshaking issue.
It's trying to log in as a username. Are the usernames on both computers the same? Because that sometimes helps these problems.
Yes, I believe they
are. So Vista's trying to log into the XP machine and trying, gives up trying to log in by name, then logs in as guest, and then gets in.
I believe they are the same.
All right. But they're on the same, but you're really trying to log into the other machine as yourself.
Right.
And Vista, is this Vista Home?
Yes, it's the Home Basic.
Yeah, Vista Home is not as easy to have multiple users on as some of the other versions of Vista.
Uh-huh.
There are some small problems with that stuff as well. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, eventually I do get a print.
Yeah, of course you do.
I don't want to wait for 5-6 minutes.
Right.
It also
could be a problem with finding it on the network. If it's not a permanent connection,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's that whole network discovery issue.
Yeah.
I got to find the network. I got to find this machine. I got to find the thing. You know, I hate to say this, Nick, but it sounds like this is one of those problems that you're going to have somebody sitting in front of the machine for.
Yeah, try plugging the printer directly into the laptop and see if the same thing happens. And that will let you know whether it's the driver in the laptop or something on the way your network is,
right, that
is
at least
talking.
At least that gets you away from one thing.
Then he also might try connecting the laptop through a wire into his router. Rather than going wireless.
Good point there, too. Temporarily connect, wire the laptop to the network and see if the same thing happens.
Right.
That'll tell us if the
laptop is not
the
on the network. The laptop is the client, the desktop is the print server.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, try that as well.
So eliminate the wireless.
How old is this printer?
I think we lost him.
Oh, I think we lost him.
Yeah.
If the printer's new enough and can actually connect to the network itself, try that.
Yeah, a lot of that's the big thing now. The printers are so cheap, they don't include the network jacks. Because printer sharing usually works.
Right.
Usually.
Right, usually. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have no hope.
He's still not here, Steve.
We have no hope. All right. A security flaw in Gmail, a serious security flaw, has turned Google's email service into a spamming machine. Insert, the information security research team, has created a proof of concept that exploits the trust hierarchy that exists between mail service providers. By exploiting a flaw in the way Google forwards messages, the spammer can send thousands of bulk emails through Google's SMTP service, Simple Mail Transfer Protocol, bypassing Google's 500 address bulk email limit and identity fraud protections. The security report notes that with the rising volume of spam, email providers have turned to whitelists and blacklists to help root out IP addresses of known spammers. Because Gmail falls into the trusted whitelist category, messages are allowed carte blanche. Get it? Whitelist, carte blanche, just
right.
Kind of a multi-linguistic joke. to bypass spam filters. Insert's report notes that no extraordinary internet expertise is necessary to exploit the flaw. In this case, the report says, this document presents a vulnerability report and proof of concept attack that demonstrate how anyone with no special internet access privileges other than being able to connect to SMTP, which is the mail server, and HTTP, which is web server, is able to exploit a single Gmail account in order to be granted nearly unrestricted access to Google's massive whitelisted SMTP relay infrastructure. Great. Great. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Printer question also. I've set up my laptop to be wireless.
Yep.
When I connect the cable, I can print. But when I disconnect the Ethernet cable, it does not print. I get an error message, cannot find the printer.
Sometimes that happens for one of two reasons. One is the wireless network is not the same address set as the wired network. They can be the same or they can be different.
Okay, how do I?
You need to fix that in the router.
Okay.
There's 10 routers out on the market and 20 different ways to do this, so I can't tell you directly how to do it, but that's what you have to do. Make sure that the, for example, on your wired router, your 192.168.1.something.
Right.
And on your wireless, you might be 192.168.0.something. Those are two entirely different networks.
Oh, okay.
So you may have to make sure they're the same.
Okay.
Those three numbers, the first three numbers have to be the same on both networks.
Right. And some routers create two networks, one for the wired, one for the wireless. So you have to turn that feature off if your router has it.
And shared printing generally won't jump from one network to the next, and that prevents, you know, somebody from another planet from printing on your printer.
Okay.
We used to do that when I was at Kodak. You go to your printer list, and there 50,000 printers showed up, and there was one in Shanghai that I always liked to print to.
Right.
Which is neat if you're going to go to Shanghai tomorrow. But
yeah, right. Not so good if you're here today. So that's one reason.
Okay.
And the second, that would be the one reason. I was going to say the other reason might be that you and your printing machine are on two different networks, but that would be true in terms of your domain.
Right.
That would be true even if you were wired. So.
And when you disconnect that wire, you do connect wirelessly and can still surf the internet?
Yeah, I can go out to the internet and everything fine. But I just can't print.
Are you sure you're connected to your wireless network? Maybe you're connecting to your neighbor's wireless network.
No, I'm connected to mine.
That would be one thing, too. Then you can print to his printers.
Yeah.
You're right.
No, I definitely got mine, but okay, I'll go into the router and check those IP addresses.
Perfect. Yeah, you can check the IP on your local computer. If you open a command line and type ipconfig/all, it will tell you what your IP address is.
Okay.
That's usually the quickest way to see what your IP is.
ipconfig/all?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Do that on both machines and see if you get... The last number should be different. It's four numbers separated by dots, like 192.168.0.something.
It's an octal quad.
Right.
Okay. So if you have... The last number will always be different, but the first three should be the same.
No, they should be the IP address of my router.
No, it should be the address of your machine.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, every
computer has its own address on your network.
Right.
And you want to make sure that both of your computers are on the same network by having those first three digits be the same.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense now.
Right.
If you have a really big network, you can split your network that way, and that's how it does.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But jumping between them is hard, and this is the easiest way to do it, just stay in the same network. Going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 48 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Every other one of them
is
getting the rap screwed up.
Is that what this is?
You
about?
Threw me off when you did the touchdown thing in there. I didn't understand what that was.
It's 53 minutes after the hour, and we better go back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Good morning. I think you mentioned earlier that when you install Service Pack 3, that IE7 would automatically be installed?
Right.
Okay, well, I had IE6. I installed just this last past Wednesday, Service Pack 3, and I still got IE6.
Great!
That's
well,
not supposed
didn't
to happen.
Change anything.
That's interesting.
As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure what Service Pack 3 does, but because I don't find any real difference.
Well, the biggest thing is it rolled up a lot of updates. If you install a fresh copy of XP Service Pack 2 now, there's 140 updates you have to load. Because Service Pack 2 came out four years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
like it
rolls all of those updates in, so if you have to reinstall XP, you don't have to download all those updates separately.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I got it installed. I did it Wednesday. I was just kind of curious. I had, long before I installed Service Pack 3, before it even came out, I had IE7. And I uninstalled it for the simple reason it would not let me select the home page that I wanted. It would keep going back to MSN.
Yeah.
And I tried every darn thing in the world to...
IE7 hides that.
And we normally call that a browser hijack.
Yeah.
Because a lot of bad websites will hijack your homepage and set it to them so you keep loading the bad stuff back in.
Yeah, right.
So
know,
MSN
is... MSN is a... I mean, my gosh, that's Microsoft stuff. Well, why would that be?
Because it's Microsoft's browser. Hello?
Yeah.
They own it.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Roger. I appreciate that.
Yeah, according to everything we've read, SP3 removes IE6. So you've got lucky.
Not for Roger. He wins. Yeah. Our next caller is Wayne from Albion, New York. Wayne?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I've done 6 computers so far, 4 laptops, 2 home units. And I do custom. And then when you do the review updates, Internet Explorer.
This is for
7,
Service Pack 3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can manually uncheck IE7.
And then I check, don't ask me this again.
Yep.
Right.
And every one of them are 6.
Yeah, that's how we did it before SP3 came out, is that IE7 kind of snuck in if you just did the Express installs. You had to do a custom install and uncheck it.
I've done custom on every one, and I still have 6.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good advice from our listeners. Our next caller is somebody from Victor.
Oh, sorry.
Want to give me a name there? Who is this?
How about John?
How about John? Welcome, John. What's your question?
Well, I got a question for you. I need your advice. I'm building a home in a remote area that does not have cable nor DSL capabilities for Internet. So what would you recommend to be put into the home?
The two alternatives are satellite and cellular.
And Clear Channel.
Clear Wire.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Clear Wire is a broadcast internet. It's a line of sight to one of their towers. So the farther away you are, the slower it gets, but that's a possibility. It's kind of neat. You carry the Clear Wire router around with you, and wherever you happen to be, you plug it in and you're on.
Yep.
Now, is this the same thing as Verizon's broadband?
No, and that's the fourth way to go.
That's cellular broadband. Verizon calls it EVDO. Those are rather expensive. Both satellite and cellular are in that 60 bucks a month or so.
But if the choice is nothing or $60 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was looking at Wild Blue or Hughes Dish.
Right, satellite internet, yeah.
But when I looked at the Verizon, the uploads and download speeds of the Verizon is not much off from the Wild Blue.
Right. Right. Those are your choices. And take a look at the Clear. I'm trying to get hold of the Clear Wire folks.
The big thing with the cellular broadband is they limit you to 5 gigs transfer a month and then slow you down. So it is unlimited bandwidth, but you don't get unlimited speed.
Right. But check out those, and those are your 4, those are your choices. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. On the other side, we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. It's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites. Rob, am I to understand we had a tiny bit of phone service just a few minutes ago? Just a tiny bit. If you got kicked off the line, we'd like to apologize. Please call back. There was a small problem with the line. As you know, every week on our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, we do a poll from the news item. Last week's poll was about Microsoft, who says that soon we will be printing drugs on your inkjet printer. 296 of you voted in that poll. 241 of you voted, tying for 295 in the all-time hit list. Can't read my own writing. 44% of you, the question was, Microsoft wants to print drugs via inkjet. 44% of you said you try it first. 36% of it said you don't need any more drugs. And 21% of you said, far out, man. Far out. Okay, this week's poll comes from an online poll. In the 4 months since InfoWorld asked businesses and individuals to sign a petition at SaveXP.com, if you haven't heard of SaveXP.com, go there and vote, requesting Microsoft to keep Windows XP for sale beyond the planned June 30th general end of sales date, more than 200,000 have signed up to add their voices. As of May 15th, the count was 200,805 signatures, excluding duplicates and fake signups. The campaign has caused a media frenzy with stories in most major newspapers and news websites, as well as in blogs and radio programs. For example, Business Week noted that in a recent story on increasing enterprise adoption of the Macintosh, that Windows Vista was perhaps one of the biggest stumbles in tech history. A separate report noted that large companies such as General Motors and Alaska Airlines are skipping Vista and instead waiting for the next version of Windows, codenamed Windows 7. And a major tech analyst firm has warned that Microsoft's many mishaps with Vista are putting the Windows franchise in jeopardy. A few weeks ago, Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer seemed to suggest that the company might give XP a reprieve, something it had already done 6 months ago when it extended XP's end of sales date from December 31, 2007 to June 30, 2008 due to customer resistance to Vista. But his PR firm quickly issued denials that any change was imminent, suggesting that the voices seeking to keep XP were a small minority. And honestly, I got to say it, for Microsoft, 200,000 is a small minority. It's an almost non-existent minority. Microsoft has extended XP's life for sub-$400 PCs and for PCs meant for poor countries. Neither type of PC can run the more resource-intensive Vista. But Dell has gone a step further, announcing it would install XP on select new systems after June 30th using the downgrade license option for Microsoft, in which a customer pays for Business Vista or Vista Ultimate, but gets XP installed instead, which they also pay for. Microsoft doesn't really care as long as you pay for two operating systems. Now, here's an interesting question. And Steve, you're a retailer and a computer vendor. Could you then put together a sub-$400 PC and sell XP on it? And if so, after purchasing that machine, can I then upgrade it by buying more RAM and a better video card and everything else to, say, the $1,000 PC I originally wanted to buy that has XP on it, which I wanted to begin with? Assuming I actually wanted XP, which I don't.
Theoretically, yeah. We haven't seen any of the details of the new OEM licenses from Microsoft.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. I mean, legally is the question.
Well, that's my point. Yeah, I mean, legally, we used to, when I was a computer dealer, we sold a lot of Apples to schools, and they had, you know, money for new machines, which ran out almost instantly. And then they had an equal amount of money for parts.
Yeah.
So they would buy a motherboard and a case and a keyboard and a power supply.
And for their convenience,
I would just pack them all in the case for them.
You're such a nice guy,
I'm
Nick.
I'm a nice guy, and I didn't charge them extra for that. So it was nicely packaged for them to use those spare parts.
We see that a lot in a lot of the corporate businesses in town where they cannot.
Statute of limitations has run out, hasn't it? Okay.
Their corporate, you know, whatever policy standard, they can't buy new computers, but they can put more money fixing an old computer than it would be to buy a new one.
Right.
Because a new computer is a new capital asset.
Right, and that's always been a problem.
Yep.
I never understood. It's all the same money. It's not like it's two different companies. It's all the same company's
money.
Budgets. Well, that's the thing that makes me crazy.
Yep.
If it's cheaper to do it the other way, why would the company spend more money to do what they want?
The other thing we used to do is sneak Macs into usually an internal advertising department in a big company where the Macs were always better at graphic arts and whatnot. We'd sneak it in as a Motorola Unix workstation.
There you go.
Because it ran a Motorola processor and it ran Unix.
Right. Sure. Right.
So we had to scratch all the Apple logos off.
Yeah, right. Here's the other thing that really bothers me is these things are being amortized at 5 years.
Yeah, and we still
most
see...
Most people don't really keep... Most businesses don't keep their machines
for
5 years.
And you shouldn't keep them for 5 years. They get too old too fast.
To do the new stuff.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of leases are still five-year leases. You know, no, 3 years at the
most. 3 years at the most, and people need to figure that out. Anyway, that was the story. So the poll is, would you like Microsoft to save XP? And the choices are, no way, Vista is the rock source. Oh, please, 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 the Linux and the Mac. So far, we have 87 votes. And oh, please, 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 is far in the lead with 64%. 18% said the Linux, 11% said the Mac, and 6% of you lied and said, no way, this is the rock source. When you are done making your vote, and I know that you people... Really, just pushing that little button doesn't do it for you. You want to really have to vent. So I've given you that opportunity. Underneath the poll, you will see a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you will be able to enter an opinion, as 11 people have done so far. Some of them actually have something to do with the poll, which kind of always fascinates me when people keep actually on topic. Now, while you're there, check out my website. I do a newsletter, which has come out irregularly lately, and I apologize for that. Life happened. But you can search the old ones and check out the forums and do all this other stuff, and I will be back on track very, very shortly. And that's the deal with that. So
some of this, wanting to keep XP is. It's basically because Vista's too much horsepower, or needs too much horsepower, right, for older computers. And that goes back to how computers have been evolving. It used to be that, you know, a basic computer is $1,000, and every year that $1,000 bought you more and more computer. And they just stopped. They never made anything cheaper. Well, now they're keeping, you know, last year's $1,000 computer is this year's $800 computer, and 2 years ago, $1,000 is this year's $500 computer.
At RIT, we have a bunch of laptops that are just underpowered for Vista. They're still perfectly good laptops. They're half a gig of RAM, 800 megahertz processors. Beautiful machines. Yep. You can't run Vista on them. So I run Linux on all of them, and I have them doing things, and they're perfectly content citizens of the college, but you can't run Vista on them. And this is what a lot of people are running into. They've got a laptop that's a couple of years old, or they want to save some money. They don't want to spend $2,000 on a laptop. They want to spend $800 or $1,000 or even $1,200. You get a half a gig of RAM or even a gig of RAM, and then you want to do some actual work with it. Vista's not your product. It just isn't. And I understand that Bill Gates doesn't care. You know,
you're supposed to buy a new computer.
He hasn't seen a gig of RAM in a machine since he was 15.
Right.
Right. He doesn't care. We do. And particularly in these perilous times where you really are needing to squeeze every penny out of your budget for food and gas, if you can save a couple hundred bucks on your computer, you want to. And I think this is a beautiful opportunity for Linux, not so much for the Mac. The Macs are also fairly expensive machines. I know you get a lot more, but in terms of actual dollars, they're expensive. I think this is a beautiful opportunity for Linux because you can buy a lower-end machine and be perfectly content. Yes, you do have to learn the operating system. Well, here's the trade-off. You double the amount of money you put into the machine, or you spend a little time learning it. Get over it.
Yep. You're going to learn Vista anyway. It's a new operating system, right, interfaces anyway.
Right, right. And so you might as well learn something that'll last you forever and is free, for God's sake.
We were talking yesterday at the Cider meeting that people have hacked Apple's 229 Apple TV, which is a media server, hacked it to load a full OS on it. So now you can get a full Mac for $229 and 10 hours labor.
Yeah, right. And that's worth it, right, to a lot of people.
Right, or $599 for the basic Mac that already has all that stuff in it. So right, it's the hobbyists, the people that want to tinker with it.
Right.
That's the way computers started. It was with people just tinkering with soldering irons and ICs. And,
right. Yep. But these don't, you know, you run Linux, you're not even tinkering. You're just learning where the things are. It's like I've always said, it's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. And it takes you a while to find the radio, and you feel stupid when you can't find the radio. But eventually you forget you didn't know where the radio was.
It becomes second nature.
Right, right, right.
Just like Windows XP did at one time.
Exactly.
Remember how different that was than 98 and everyone was all mad and
yeah.
They moved things around. Well, and that's been Dave's complaint. You know, every version of Windows changes where the common utilities are. And then the next version changes it again.
And let me tell you how tiring that is for somebody who answers people's computer questions in the newspaper or yep. in the forums, on my website and all this other stuff. If you don't tell me what version of the operating system you're running, then I have to answer the same question three times.
Right.
You know, I have to tell you where it is in XP. Well, two times. I have to tell you where it is in XP. I have to tell you where it is in Vista.
And then they're mad because they're running 95.
Yeah. right.
I can't get my wireless printer to work in Windows 3.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And take a hike with your Windows 3. But yeah, that's the problem. They change it every time. Because the problem is even if they tell me what operating system is. Because I used to, and now apparently I'm doing Uncle Dave's rant. I would answer the question and people would write to me, that didn't work for me. Are you on XP? No. Then that's why it didn't work for you. Yep, it's a different set of instructions for Vista. Now I just avoid it. I try at least, if I've got the time, to answer the question twice. Every stinking time.
Of course, it would be worse with Linux because there are so many flavors of Linux.
Right. But Linux people, at least so far, have been geeks. So if you say, this is how you do it in GNOME, they figure out how to do it in KDE.
Right.
Right.
So and that's, it makes sense.
Right.
We a lot of us on the Mac side have gotten used to translating like that because you get something with instructions in Windows and you convert it to Macintosh on the fly. And
yeah, right.
In fact, we've told people that when you call, if you have to call tech support for some printer, don't tell them you're on a Mac. You know, you just when they say to go to start and choose control panels, okay, we know to go to Apple menu and choose system preferences.
All right, we're going to take... Apparently, I was ranting for a while there. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, I don't know if the camera is ahead or behind. If you haven't seen the camera yet, check it out. Rob's running from studio to studio, punching buttons, doing things, running back and forth, swearing at the top of his lungs. Ooh, he's got a filthy mouth. I hope your mother's not listening.
Putting chewing gum on stuff?
Oh, yes, and you are the saint of the group.
I am. Have you ever heard me swear on this show?
On the air?
Right.
No.
Yeah, see? There you are.
That's on the air.
There
because they take you out in handcuffs and beat you in the parking lot.
Exactly. What the heck anyway? I don't even know what you're talking about. All right, we're back, and we did have that service with the phones, but I think they're fixed, so give us a call. It's 222-1180 in the 585 area code. Outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. And, of course, star 1180 if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, and I believe that only works in the 585 area code as well. So it's 222-1180, 295-1180, or star 1180. It's all about the 1180 at WHAM. Another lawsuit. More cash out of Apple's pocket. You may have heard about the credit being offered to Canadian owners of older iPods. And I need credit for my iPod. I forgot to bring it. It's still broken. We sent it out to be fixed. Yeah, it's not fixed. There's no change. Like, they put it back in the box and sent it to us without even touching it. You may have heard about the credit being offered to Canadian owners of older iPods. This case involves faulty power adapters for PowerBooks and iBooks. A class action suit filed in 2006 alleged that Apple misrepresented problems with the power adapters, what they used to call the floor-mounted power supply. When the Apple IIc first came out, it was the first time I'd ever seen the brick in the middle of the power. Right. It looked like an anaconda that ate a brick.
Right.
And they some marketing guy, as opposed to just leaving it to be, called it, it was a feature of the Mac IIc. It had a floor-mounted power supply. In 2001, Apple recalled about 57,000 adapters sold with PowerBooks after reports of overheating and sparking. I guess those would be bad. In court filings, plaintiffs said the adapter dangerously frays, sparks, and prematurely fails to work. Prematurely fails to work. Now, doesn't that imply that at some point it is designed to fail to work? And it is eventually only prematurely failing to work?
Yeah, right. Eventually everything breaks.
I guess. Apple will pay customers who... But I'm sorry, your car died, but it just prematurely failed to work. It's not. It's a feature. Apple will pay customers who bought replacements made by Apple or a third party $25 to $79, depending on the cost of the item, which I believe were somewhere in the $150 to $300 range. It's unclear as to whether or not you'll need a receipt, and since it's been some time since this all happened, it's unclear if that would be truly fair anyway. But the settlement, which was granted preliminarily, granted preliminary approval by the U.S. District Court Judge James Ware on March 24th, still requires final approval. A hearing on final approval is scheduled for September 8th. So for those of you who have PowerBooks and iBooks that look like the 4th of July, there may be relief coming soon.
Hooray.
Well, and what was it's all just the stupid lawyers, because Apple acknowledged the problems. They had a recall. They gave you a free replacement power supply.
Apparently, that was only for the iBooks, not for the PowerBooks.
Well, there were iBooks and PowerBooks involved in it.
Oh, all right.
So apparently people wanted extended beyond that, or...
I don't know.
They want more than a free power supply.
Well, or see, it may well be that the people who didn't have a problem didn't get a fix, and now the program is over, and they're starting to have the same problem.
Yeah, or before they knew there was a program, they went out and bought it anyway.
Right, right.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi. Actually, I have a solution for you.
Oh, good.
This is on the networking fellow that called in earlier with the Vista laptop and the HP.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I can't remember what you call it, the HP network. Well, what it is, a tech from HP clued me into it. It's a really simple fix. Vista calls the network work groups, and XP... Yep. calls it MS Home.
We forgot about that. Dave would have thought of that.
Dave would have thought of that. The work group names. Absolutely right.
And annoyingly, is 9598 called it work group. XP changed it to MS Home, and now Vista changed it back to work group.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to change one of the names. You have to pick one name and run with that.
Right. So both computers have to be, or all computers have to be in the same work group name that you get to by right-clicking on My Computer, choosing
Properties.
That's what
I was trying to think of when I said domain. It's work group.
Work group, yeah. Right-click on My Computer, Properties, and then Computer Name.
Right. The second half of it, when you install the wireless networking software in your XP machine, it calls your machine, your original machine or your host machine, something different. It picked the name of, I don't know where it got it from, it calls mine SO239 something or other. It doesn't care what I named it.
Right.
So you have to look for that name.
Yeah, there's also there's the username and the computer name and the workgroup name, and those are all three separate names.
Right.
Right. You have to pick the name that that XP gave your host computer, because I screwed with it for 5 months till I ran across this fella.
Or you use the IP address and forget about names.
Right.
Well, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Vista doesn't care.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it. I love it when our users call in with answers to other people's questions.
And we need Dave. Dave would have thought of that. He's the one that always remembers that.
Right. Dave. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi. I got Spyware Blaster. And when I go to update it, it tells me that protection is enabled for everything but Mozilla Firefox, which is really what I want it enabled for. Every time I go to enable it, it gives me some error thing.
And this is what program?
Windows XP.
You have XP, and the program that's giving you this?
Oh, I'm sorry, Spyware Blaster.
Oh, Spyware Blaster.
Now, it used to work okay. I didn't have any trouble with it up until the last, I don't know, a couple weeks or so.
Have you updated to the Firefox Beta 3?
No.
Yeah, because that could be the issue. It doesn't know about the new Firefox. Apparently, this is not an unknown problem. A lot of people are reporting that Spyware Blaster cannot protect Firefox.
Oh, okay.
We'll see if there's a solution for it.
I think I put on Super Anti-Spyware, and it seems like it started not updating after I put that on, but I guess I'm not really all that positive with that. There shouldn't be any conflict between the two, right?
Did you run Spybot?
Yeah.
Spybot can disable Spyware Blaster.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Running two different anti-spyware programs sometimes can be a problem because one sees the other one as spyware, not as anti-spyware.
So make sure, first, uninstall Spybot.
Okay.
Secondly, make sure that Spyware Blaster, or the other way around, uninstall Spyware Blaster, but make sure that Spyware Blaster is enabled. If it's not, or if you can't tell, uninstall it and reinstall it, and that should fix the problem.
Okay.
All right?
Ready.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
I'm running XP, and I've got an RW drive. If I put the disk in, a blank disk in the RW drive, it'll go in and come out all right. If there's anything on the disk, or if I put a blank disk in and write something on it, it will not open. I have to use the paperclip routine and get the disk out. Then if I reboot, it'll open and close when it's empty. It'll open and close with a blank disk, but as soon as there's information in the disk...
It probably doesn't think it's finished writing.
There are two ways you can write to a read-write disk.
You can drag and drop and...
Well, no. Well, I'm sorry. I mean two ways you can get stuff on, but two ways that you can actually write to it. One is to leave it open at the end of the session.
Uh-huh.
And that
so you can write to it again, but you can't take it out of the drive because it's open.
Okay. But
the other is to close it and the next time start a brand new session.
Okay. This problem is just started. I'm using it as a direct drive where I can drag and drop.
Yeah.
And, that's packet writing, it's called.
Yes, all right. When I drag and drop anything onto the disk, if it's a blank disk, but it will refuse to open. If I put in a disk which I've used in the past, which is easy to open and close, that's got information on it, it will close. It will run. I mean, I can still drag and drop. It will actuate. I'm running XP Home. I can drag and drop, but I can't get the disk back out without the paperclip.
Doesn't Joe need to eject the disk on the
eject command inside of Windows?
Yes, I tried the eject command.
Does it say something about files in use? Do you get an error message at all?
No, I get nothing. It just, I didn't even touch it with the mouse, and I've tried the button. The button is dead, by the way, too. It doesn't feel like it's pushing at all at the time.
Right.
Bad drive, or?
It could be, but it's more likely that Windows thinks it's still in use and won't let you eject it when it's in use.
Let me say this. When I do take the paperclip and open it up and close the drawer manually, which you have to push it in, it won't take and go in.
Mm-hmm. After you do that, Joe.
It keeps recycling, you know.
Yeah, because it's still trying to write information to the disk that you've now manually removed.
Uh-huh.
There are two things here at work. When you drag and drop stuff and then try to eject the disk.
Yes.
Yeah, that is one of the two problems. When you drag and drop stuff, it's not actually there yet.
I know, but in the past, it has always opened. It just started not doing it.
Well, but listen to me. Service Pack 1 made some changes to the way that packet writing is done on two disks. Okay. It now will not eject until, at the very least, it's done writing.
Okay.
And if you take it out before it's done writing... it screws up the disk, and it won't write to it anymore.
All right.
Did you mean to say Service Pack 1?
I've got Service Pack 2 there.
Okay.
And it, I'll put in a disk, let's say, that I've had in for years and not put anything on it, not make anything different, let's say with just JPEGs or something like that. And if it's got something on it, anything on it already, it will bring it up. You can run it. You can watch the pictures, but you can't get the disk.
And you're not trying to write anything more to it.
No, right. Not trying to put anything on. And not doing a thing, just putting the disk in.
Then it won't read.
No, oh, it does read. It won't eject.
But it won't eject.
It'll write, but it won't eject. And even if I don't write, if I put something on that I've hit in the past.
Okay, I see what you're saying. It, well, that sounds to me like a broken drive.
Okay, all right. You may be perfectly right.
Because that, I mean, if that's where the problem lies, if you can do whatever you want except eject it, it sounds like the button's broken.
Yeah.
Are you using the Windows burning software, or do you have...
I use Raxio but for the burning software, but in the past, I mean, it opens perfectly well.
Right. What I'm thinking is there was an update to something in Windows or an update to something in Raxio that introduced this problem. Because it sounds like it won't eject it because it thinks it's still being used.
No, I think it won't eject it because the thing is broken.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's probably a bad drive.
Have you tried putting in a music CD?
No, I haven't.
Do me a favor. Stick in a music CD or a data CD that's not writable.
Yeah.
And see if it ejects. If the button doesn't work, then it's definitely a broken button.
All right. It does work if I put in an absolutely blank disk, put nothing on it, do nothing to it, let it search around and then push the button.
Because it hasn't opened the session yet, so it doesn't think it needs to close it.
It could still, it could still be a broken drive because there's a sensor that says it's reading, it's writing, it's doing. So once that sensor gets tripped,
let me say this. When I put it in, the green light flashes until it looks the disc over to see what's on it, and then it stops and brings up the thing that you can play with the disc, you can read it, you can write to it, and I do nothing, it won't open. And it stopped with a green light flashing and everything. It seems information on the disc.
Right. I think what's going on is the disc is being grabbed by something, which is now saying, I can't relinquish this disc yet until I'm done.
And that would be the hardware, right?
Well, it would be Roxio, or it would be the writing software, would be something. But without sitting in front of that machine, I can't tell you what that thing might be.
Yeah.
So I think this is one of those instances where you are going to have to take it to somebody. I'm sorry.
Check Roxio to see if there has been an update to an update. Maybe something happened to introduce this error. Maybe there's an update that will fix it.
If Dave were here, he would suggest checking for a new driver for the drive.
That's true.
That's the Roxio software, the burning software.
No, I'm saying a Windows driver for the CD writer.
A lot of times what we see happen is that Windows has its own writing software built in, and then you load Roxio or Nero or one of the other writing softwares, and they both try to access that drive and confuse each other.
Yeah.
But without sitting in front of it, I'm sorry, I cannot tell you what the problem is, but it's certainly something along that line. All right, our next caller, Lance, from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
Lance.
Hi.
I've been running Windows XP with Thunderbird, and there's one email bulletin that I get twice a week from the same organization, and used to be able to just tell it to print, and it would print the whole thing, headers and text and footers combined. But now they outsourced their email to another company, and when I tell it to print, I get the header on page one and the trailer on page three, and in between I get only the first page of the text. Now, how can I edit that HTML text to insert page breaks where I want them?
HTML doesn't do page breaks.
Uh-huh.
It's not designed as a printing format, and in general, it's very hard to do something like that.
Put a bunch of break commands in to put blank lines and force a new
page.
Right,
that's the only way to really do it is to print a page.
That I have done, insert enough blank lines to get them where I want them, but that still wouldn't help unless I take it out to, copy it out to...
some other program.
Let me suggest that this is going to only be solved by you talking to the people you get the newsletter from and talking to the company that sends them out as to how they do that and how you can fix it, because it's going to have to be...
You can do it with cascading style sheets.
Well, but then you have to be able to write one, but they should be able to write one, and then you have to call it from the email to begin with, so... your best bet is to make contact with the company that they've outsourced to. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. No Dave Enright. No Dave
right.
Enright.
Not
Steve
today.
Ray, Chris. Oh, I made the mistake once. You haven't spoken correct. Never mind. On Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
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 Hello. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are certainly Soundbites. Do we want mail or do we want callers? We want callers.
We love callers.
We love our callers. Our next caller is Andrew from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Andrew. What's your question?
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Ichi, how are you?
Great. I got a new laptop. It's an HP tablet. And it seems like I'm running Vista, and it seems like there's a lot of programs running in the bottom, like...
Yes, there certainly are.
Like a million of them, you know?
Yep.
I was wondering how do I either get rid of those or choose what I can get rid of?
Well, that takes a lot of experience, a lot of guesswork. Here's the problem. HP loads up a metric bucket load of crap on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so does running a tablet. There's always extra software that comes in with running a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And Vista does it too. So you're right. There's an amazing amount of junk.
There's like Java. I don't even know what that is.
Java is required. Well,
that's half the problem. You don't know what you can remove. So you remove something and Windows quits working.
Yeah.
There is a
How much memory do you have in this thing?
It's a 2. Gig. You mean like RAM? 3 gig, I think. You
know, 3 gig. Well, that's a lot. But even so, you're using up a lot of horsepower with all this
like
junk.
I don't notice any. I mean, like I said, I just got it, but I really don't want it to have problems.
Yeah, it's a huge mess. There's a website called Black Viper where he has listed what all the services are and what they do, and then that may help you decide if you can remove that service or not. Steve Gibson was talking on one of his podcasts that he's got XP loaded in 130 megs by turning all of the extra services off he knows he doesn't want.
Yep.
And that's half the problem. You have to know what the services do to know if you want them or not.
But it's a problem, and only a professional can really help you sit down with you. And it takes time. Sit down with you, explain what each of the things does, and then only you can decide if you want to keep it or get rid of it. Now, I don't know if they offer, somebody ought to do a meeting like that at the local PC users group.
Part of the problem is it's so dependent on how you use your computer. You know, yeah. Steve Gibson turns off the DHCP client because he has static addressing.
Right.
So that's a service he can get rid of. You know, most home users can't get rid of the DHCP client because they need it.
Right.
So it's how you specifically use your computer and what services you specifically need.
But there are generalities that will apply across the board.
Right. But your best bet is to sit down with a professional, and that would be Dave or Steve, and actually have them go through your machine with you. It's going to cost you a few bucks, but when you're done, you have a clean, at least as clean as possible, running machine.
Right, and you can take a look at the Black Viper lists and see if you understand them. See, that's the big thing. If you don't understand what they're talking about, don't turn something off, because you could make your Windows not run at all.
Exactly. All right, our next caller is Barb from Honey Eye Falls. Welcome, Barb. What's your question?
Hi, I have a problem trying to get the screen resolution changed.
Right.
Okay, right now I go to Display Properties and go to Settings.
Right.
And the resolution is set at 640 by 480 pixels.
Right.
And it has a little slide doodah. Okay. Well, it won't move. It won't move at all.
Are you in safe mode?
That I don't know.
If you go back out to the desktop in the four corners, it would say safe mode.
Okay.
It basically means is your video driver is not loaded, so the computer doesn't think you can switch to any other resolution.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, well, the first thing is, if you're in safe mode, it will always be 640 by 480.
Oh, all right.
If you're not in safe mode, which you really shouldn't be, then the problem is you either don't have a video driver at all, or your video driver has become corrupted.
Okay. It might be then that I don't have a video driver at all.
And then it becomes you have to know what video card you have in your computer to know what driver to use. Is it a name brand computer or is it a custom build?
It's a Dell.
You can go to Dell's website and get the code number off the back of the computer, their service tag.
Okay.
And it will let you download the driver you need. But it's tricky finding the exact ones because it will list all the drivers for your computer.
Right. Or you can bring the machine to Dave or Steve and they can do that for you.
Or any other reputable.
Or any reputable computer dealer. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Our next caller is Charlie from Geneva, New York. Welcome, Charlie. What's your question? Hello, Charlie? Did I catch you unawares? Charlie?
Hello?
Hello? Hello, Charlie?
Yes.
All right, what's your question?
Okay, my question is, did I miss the memo on the Service Pack 3 thing about IE 7 and 6?
Yeah.
Now, I went ahead and downloaded it, and am I in SPAC in 6 now?
No, you're in 7. You should be in 7.
Very good.
Yeah, the issue is that if you install Service Pack 3, you lose IE 6.
That's no issue.
Well, IE7 has its has a whole bunch of other problems. A lot of extra toolbars don't work with it.
Oh, that's
a lot
true,
of,
too. Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah, a lot of programs don't work with IE7, so that's been an issue since
They'll
IE7
They'll be updated.
Came out.
They just haven't been yet.
Exactly. Yep. Like Media Player won't
You got
work.
It.
Yep.
My golly gee whiz.
Yep. Or...
So just use Firefox and then...
Firefox, Thunderbird, keeps working. It.
Yep.
It won't run.
Ubuntu.
I got to go back to use Live Hotmail, or what do you call that thing? Live Windows.
Yeah, Windows. You're saying Thunderbird and Firefox and all those things don't run?
I got Firefox will come up, but Thunderbird won't. It says it fails to connect the Roadrunner every time.
Well, that's because you haven't correctly inserted your information.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. That's true of a lot of people. It used to work, and then they changed something at their back end and changed the name of the mail server, and you have to go in and fix that.
FAQ. Their DNS IPs.
Right. There's an FAQ on the site that talks about it.
Not the TLS. There's a, what do you call it?
the DNS.
DNS. Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
I will look at that then.
Thanks, Charlie. Our next caller is Grant on a cell phone. Welcome, Grant. What's your question?
Well, I just got stuck having to buy a new laptop. I bought one of them compact 700 series. And, of course, I had to get Vista with it. Kind of emergency buy. I was out in California. My other laptop stopped working.
Right.
Okay. Well, anyway, I avoided it like a plague for a long time. Now I'm finally in it. It's driving me nuts is every time I click on a program to start it, I get that doggone black screen, then it comes up in a gray screen. Do you want to allow this program to run?
That's the security advisor, which is a good thing because it prevents bad guys from getting into your system, but it's a horrible thing because it prevents you from doing what you want.
Exactly.
And if you turn that off, then you lose all your security in Vista and
should be able to tell it to remember my answer.
No, there isn't a remember this answer or allow this program to run all the time. That's actually what I'm looking for in it. Someplace I can actually tell it, okay, WinRAR is fine to run whenever I tell it to, you know, something like that.
Yeah, what a lot of people are really porked off about that. What they're saying is what that feature actually does is train people to blindly click on links.
So now when a bad guy pops a link up on your page, you're going to click allow anyway because you're so used to clicking allow.
Right.
There should be a way to have it remember that same program for next time.
You would certainly think so, but it may well possibly be that there isn't
Well, you can reduce your security level, the user access controls in Control Panel. So you reduce your security level, and then those messages don't come up as often, but then you're running less secure, and there's more chance of the bad guys getting in.
Right. What Microsoft really wants you to do is not run third-party programs. These things never come up for their own programs. We don't have an answer for you yet, Grant. That's the short answer, I'm afraid.
Downgrade to XP.
Yeah, right.
Right. And you don't have to buy a machine with Vista. There are plenty of machines still available with XP on them. You just have to look a little harder.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, Grant. I don't know of an answer. There may well be one. We'll look into it. For those of you who wanted that URL again, it's blackviper.com. Steve's got that on the website under links for today's show. So check that out. It's a pretty neat site. Don't go willy-nilly playing with that thing because you can never tell exactly what's what if you don't know what you're doing. We are done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Reich, who once again, and now that I know what he actually does here, I'm more in awe of you than I were before, and I did not realize that would be possible.
Wow.
So thank you very much. He comes
I'm humbled
and,
as well.
And does that whole thing. And the mighty Rob Linton, who actually, you know, ran from room to room and did things today as opposed to just snoozing and surfing porn while we were doing the show. I'm Nick Francesco.